Valor is a poor substitute for numbers.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
So what would you substitute for numbers?
A bigger number?
Well, that's not really substituting, is it? I mean, it's still numbers.
Let's see. If I had to choose something besides numbers, I would probably choose... that's a hard question. Not Valor. Definitely not Valor.
I think I know what you would substitute. I don't think I would pick it, but I'm pretty sure you would choose Sausage.
I don't think I would.
Yeah, you would.
If you say so, Will.
Yeah. So anyway... I'm Will Lentz, sometimes known as Kennen, and this is my erstwhile co-host.
Brett Zeiler, also known as Intentionally Anonymous.
Not so anonymous now,
so anonymous anymore.
In fact, you know, I think you ought to make a new forum name, and it should be not so anonymous now, eh? Will they let you use question marks in usernames?
Probably not. Also, it sounds kind of Canadian, and I don't...
Right, that was my point.
I don't do that.
There's a lot of Canadians that play.
I don't swing that way, if you know what I mean.
Really?
The Canadian way.
Wow. You know, Dark Knowledge is going to be pretty disappointed.
I know he is. He's been disappointed for a while now. It's not going to happen, big guy. You can stop sending the letters.
He literally is a very big guy.
I know.
that doesn't mean obese for anybody listening.
No,
he's just not. He's just a very tall man.
He's a mountain of a man.
Yes. I wonder if he rides.
I hope so.
Me too. Well, John, if you're listening and you ride, let us know.
Some pretty weak banter overall, Will.
That was weak sauce. We're going to have to get cracking. I'm hoping after more Archer debuts, we can really get rolling on that. But we'll get to Archer for props and slops.
So. I haven't seen any of the new season.
You are such a slacker.
I am. I also don't have cable.
So, this episode, we're going to reply to a little listener mail, and we have a long-awaited segment returning to the podcast. But first, listener mail here. Double first. Prior to that, point five, perhaps. I meant to clarify for folks that are listening who were expecting to have a face-off between the two decks we built pretty recently on the show. We apologize for those not being here. They are not here because of the long-awaited return of the upcoming segment. Spoiler alert, it's new cards.
So, listener mail.
Yeah, but anyway, listener mail. We had a listener write in, Mr. Miko Abola. I'm hoping I'm not mispronouncing that too terribly.
You probably did.
Almost certainly. But he plays in Manila, and they've really been having their meta take off since the first series of the HBO show was aired, and they've been having monthly tournaments, but they're seeming to have some trouble lately because they've got new players coming in, and they're having some issues against the veterans because the new players only have core set, you know, maybe a couple deluxe expansions and such, and they just don't have the card pool to compete on quite the same level. So, Miko's asking basically for ideas on what works to keep new players interested in the game. He mentions, or she possibly, the email doesn't specify, that they're thinking of making a beginner bracket in tournament play where the card pool is restricted and players can only participate in these events a limited number of times.
Basically expecting you to, after however much time, to have built up a larger collection.
Right.
Rather than just chilling, just buying a core set and a deluxe expansion and just only playing in those tournaments indefinitely.
Right. Assuming, there was a little confusion when Brett and I were talking about this before, because Miko uses the term bracket. So yeah, there was a little bit of confusion here by the use of the term bracket. At first glance, I agree with Brett and thought that he meant just a separate tournament for beginners that you can only play in a certain number of times that would have this limited card pool. But using bracket made me wonder, oh, okay, maybe it is some kind of bracket tournament where whoever wins out of the beginners winds up kind of getting paired into the veteran pool and then plays on out and such. I don't know. I can see it working either yeah. way, but the separate tournament, I think, is way easier to manage.
I agree. Aside from that, the only thing that really jumps to mind is actually having like entire tournaments where you limit the card pool to... I mean, basically do a faux rotation just for, like, a tournament. I don't know how funny a tournament's, but a tournament every month or every 2 months.
Yeah.
Where it's just a smaller card pool.
Yeah, I thought about that. If you maybe alternate months where, like, 1 month is core sets plus any plus, you know, all the deluxe boxes or something like that, and the next one's full.
Yeah, everything, yeah.
Because I don't think, being a veteran player here, I don't think I would be too bummed out right now, especially, to try out building a deck with some fairly wildly different restrictions.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I'd be willing to give it a try.
Yeah, probably.
You still have to overcome the kind of skill issue and experience.
There's nothing you can do to help with that.
So I mean, even once you've paired them both down to a limited card pool, the more experienced player is still more likely to win and could cause some awkward moments. So you know, it is tricky because people just kind of have to stick with things in order to get that experience. Mm-hmm. There's not really any other good way to do it. And, you know, that was when things were booming really well here in our neck of the woods. Basically, that's just what we were doing. We were just playing regularly.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we had things really driving, we were having, what, one tournament a month, and then everybody was meeting for just free play the other 3 weeks, right? So that's kind of what we did. Nothing too special or exciting here, but if other listeners have some feedback and ideas, feel free to drop us a line at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. Post it on the Facebook page or post it in the comments section in the posting at CardGameDB when the episode goes up or over on the FFG boards, just somewhere so that Miko stands a good chance of seeing it. Or if you email it, we'll try to get the info out there as well.
Yes.
All right, and then here's the super exciting thing. It has been months, but we finally have exciting new content for the show.
I mean, it's only been 2 months, so...
That's still months.
It is months, but I'm not sure if it needs that much emphasis.
It's been three, I thought. I thought the last pack was October.
November.
I thought it was last week of October.
I don't think so.
Still. Okay, it would have had... If it was November, it would have had to have been the very first week of November. And first week of November to last week of January is real close to it is a matter of days away from being 3 months.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know. I thought it was closer to mid-November because I know I didn't get the pack until after we were back from Worlds, so.
I'm pretty sure it was out for folks, but I think everyone just didn't bother to pick it up.
That's possible.
Because of Worlds.
But yeah, it has been a while. I'll freely admit that.
Yes. Yeah. So once again, for any of you expecting a game this episode, we ditched that idea for now. We'll come back to it when we get the chance here, but we figured we wanted to jump on the new card set review first, and we've heard back from folks multiple times that they enjoy the longer format episodes. Mm-hmm. And whatnot, you know. Basically, the reason I'm bringing this up, I guess I should clarify, is we're changing the format of our set reviews.
Again.
Or our pack reviews. Again. I mean, at this point, it's been 2 years since we changed that format. We started out rating every card, decided that took too long. We changed to the top five, bottom five scheme, I guess. And, you know, there were folks that liked one or the other. There's pluses and minuses of both. But hey, we're nearly to 100 episodes now, and like I said, it seems like the feedback over the last year is that folks very much like the longer format shows. So we think the time is ripe to flip back to rating every card in the pack rather than just the top and bottom. At the moment,
also it's kind of easier on us because we don't make hard choices for bottom cards in a pack.
Yes, and you know,
that's tough.
Yeah, which is the least useful in the in this pack.
Yeah, occasionally there's like just a garbage card, but for the most part, it's just us picking the like three or four least useful cards in a pack, which are all still fine cards on their own.
Yeah, that is one of the tricky things. And in feedback to us about the review episodes, that has come up a good bit where folks are like, oh, well, this card can be used here and, you know, in this situation and these things going on. And it's just tricky because our criteria, the way that worked, isn't necessarily that this is a terrible card. It's just out of the others in this pack and only compared to the others in this pack, this is what we feel to be the least useful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that kind of skews the rating system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
it definitely does.
And the info that we give people when we're only comparing like that. So I think if we broaden it up, rate all the cards in the pack, and look at them a little more holistically, you know, with more thought to the rest of the meta and how that card fits into the meta rather than how it stands in that pack, I think it's going to be more productive for listeners, too.
Probably.
So shall we get rolling then?
We shall.
Okay. Good deal. And if anybody doesn't like what we're doing now, well, feel free to tell us, but we'll see. Unless this winds up being a 3-hour show, odds are good we're going to stick fairly close to this for a while.
Yep.
And for one clarification, since we're not doing the top and bottom five, we're looking at giving the cards a letter grade. So if any of you happen to listen to the Magic the Gathering podcast, Limited Resources, it'll probably sound a little familiar.
Well, I don't listen to that.
Well, if you're at all interested in Magic, and I know you
are. I am absolutely not interested in Magic at all.
Oh, well, never mind then.
Carry on.
My wayward son.
There'll be peace with him.
You are done?
Now, with this letter ranking, it'll be the standard, you know, A, B, C, D, F. Rating.
You'll be very familiar with it if you've gone to school in the U.S.
Yeah. So it's going to be based off of that. We're also going to just take a couple, you know, 2 or 3 quick minutes to go over just examples of what an A card is or a B card or an F card. Yeah. Just to get you in our minds as we are rating things.
Yeah. Give you something to reference that off of.
So an A card is going to be something that has an enormous game impact. Which is something like Mirror Read was the first thing that jumped to mind.
Yeah, very versatile, very efficient. It's gonna be useful time and again.
Yeah,
almost no matter when you draw it.
Yeah, you'll see it in pretty much any deck that can play it.
Right.
I mean, A cards are very clearly just the best of the best. They're the most powerful cards in the game. Are A's
exactly. B's then are cards, and these I think are actually going to be a lot of the beefy characters that you see pretty reasonably, a lot of the renowned characters, for instance, because the idea that popped up in my head was the No Shadows Knight of Flowers.
And I agree.
If that man sticks on the table, he has a solid impact. He keeps swinging in for challenges. He is a threat to deal with. But, conversely, he has a very obvious weakness to be worked around.
Yeah.
Something that an A card like Mira doesn't so much have that obvious weakness.
Yes. Still good cards, but not, you know, game-breaking in and of themselves.
Right.
So that brings us to C's, which is really going to be where the majority of cards tend to hang out. Sea's not necessarily bad, it's just kind of average.
Yes. It is average as far as the grading scale.
Yes, it is.
So, that I think interestingly is what is the slot where, or the rating that you have more flexibility
at. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because a given deck, depending on its needs, could choose from a plethora of C-rated cards to kind of skew it in a certain direction, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're better or worse.
Yes.
Just different facets.
Yeah, so a C card is something like Maester Crescent. You're not going to see him in every deck. When you draw him, you'll probably want to see him, and depending on what's going on in the game, he may do something good. He may just, you know, chill out and make a challenge or two and then die for claim. But, I mean, he does have a solid effect that could be very powerful in a given situation.
Right. Then we've got the D cards. These are the ones that are a little under what you actually would want to mess around with. And sometimes this can be deceptive. The idea that came to my mind after I was thinking for a little bit is Qyburn's Informants,
yeah,
is it?
Qyburn's Informers from the core set.
Informers. I always goof the name up. From the core set. Who's got that 4 cost for only 2 strength, but you keep looking at him and thinking, but I get to draw 2 cards. Like, doesn't this have potential? It's the sort of card you kind of want to try. The stats feel a little off. You play him for a little while, and then inevitably you wind up cutting it for something else in the C and up range.
Yeah, it's just these D cards are just not... Most of the time, they're just not going to make the cut.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much the criteria there, is they just don't make the cut.
Bringing us to F cards... which are, in general, cards that won't even make the pre-cut. You know, when you're building a deck, you may come across and you may have, you know, a bunch of D cards that are in there initially and make it out. F cards will never make it even that far.
There's really only just one good example for that, isn't there?
There's really only one, and that's obviously without his beard.
Wow. Yeah, I almost forgot that card existed.
I know, it's that bad.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, so without his beard, I mean, you are down a card whenever you play it. It really doesn't affect the board state at all. You know, your opponent's options. I mean, I went over this before in the show with Damon. It just does zero, basically. Possibly negative one.
If anything, it does negative one.
Since you're down the event card that you just played.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's an F minus.
Maybe. But it's absolutely in the F range.
Yeah. And to add to that, we will probably be using some pluses and minuses to note, you know, something feels like it has a little bit more or a little bit less potential, but is probably still in that same broad category of, you know, A, B, C, or D, whatever.
Correct.
All right, I'll read the first card here. Then we've got Little Bird. It's a Lannister character. It's a 1 cost, 1 strength, intrigue icon, ally. With a challenges ability, kneel Little Bird to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gains, choose one, an intrigue icon, stealth, or infamy. What do you think here?
I think it's actually a pretty neat little chump.
You know, I think so as well. It's very flexible.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is pretty
cool.
The intrigue icon, especially in Lannister, I see maybe not being as powerful as it could be.
Yeah, I could take it.
But I can see some application in, particularly in clansmen decks.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because
they tend to have a dearth of intrigue icons.
Yes, indeed. You know, I could definitely see myself wanting to give a Burned Men that intrigue icon
absolutely.
And swing in for extra claim or something along those lines. Stealth, I think, is really where what you're going to want to choose
in general,
9 times out of 10 with Little Bird, because stealth remains arguably the best keyword in the game. Certainly within the top, 3.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to help you push through challenges. It's going to deflect incoming challenges in a pinch, depending, of course, on the characters the opponent's sending at you. But with stealth being as powerful as it is, having defensive stealth is probably going to be applicable. And it's just very solid in being able to bounce around, you know, and give it to whichever character needs it the most. Die for claim when you need it. What about that infamy?
So that will probably be the least often chose one outside of, niche decks, potentially, Brotherhood decks that don't use the Brotherhood agenda. that is key off of Infamy. This gives you a guy that can give any of your, like, I mean, you can give your Barrack Infamy every turn if you need to, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you know, that's a pretty good point.
Outside of something like that, I doubt people will be choosing Infamy very often. It'll almost always be Stealth, occasionally an Intrigue icon.
Yeah, fair enough. So where does this kind of sit in the meta? I mean, there are a lot of pretty solid Lanny one drops.
That is absolutely true.
I mean, we've got Cersei's Attendant from the core set is still an okay, yeah, if not absurdly fine, great option. Of course, the Lannisport Moneylender, Weaponsmith, and what's the power icon one?
Counselor.
Remain great economy options, yep, and give you that different icon spread.
Mm-hmm.
The Doubting Septa gives you the Holy Crest, which is useful for things like Confession, and replaces herself when she dies. Man, so how does Little Bird stack up there? Because it's a pretty crowded slot.
It is, and because of that's probably the reason I'm giving him the grade I'm giving him. It's probably going to be a C or a C plus. And pretty much entirely because it is so crowded at the one drop slot, and that's not even including like Tommen is usually in there.
Touche. Then we also have Penny as
yes.
Well.
So there's a lot of one drop Lannister guys, and if there weren't as many, he'd probably be a little higher. I probably wouldn't give him more than a B in general.
I agree. It's not just a huge game breaking.
No, it is that it is not.
You know, I think I'm going to agree with that as well. It's a solid card. Not game-breaking, not clearly underpowered, very versatile. I'm going to give it like a C+.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, next up is another Lanny card, Blackwater Bay Veteran. He's a 2-cost, non-unique Lannister guy. He's 2-strength, military, and power icons. He has the very important House Brax trait. He has Infamy, and while Blackwater Bay Veteran has one or more power on it, it gains a military naval enhancement. So naval enhancement on the military icon. He also has a war crest.
You know, I'm really digging that war crest.
Absolutely.
That's something, you know, Lanny's been a little lacking in at this low cost like this. You know, it's been bigger guys like, well, I mentioned the Burnmen earlier. And things like that, even, you know, potentially Jaime and stuff. Mm-hmm. But still, that's the 4 or 5 cost range. And having a 2-drop Warcrest like this...
A 2-cost non-unique Warcrest.
2-drop non-unique, even better. Without the ally trait.
Correct.
I just want to point this out.
Yeah.
This is a Lannister character without the ally
trait. My mind is blown.
I know, right? I didn't expect it to happen in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's really solid just on that front,
yeah.
I think. Because he gives the option for some nice aggro military-based...
Yeah, yeah. Basically, unlocks is the word I want to use, but unlocks Die by the Sword and Price of War in Lanny decks.
Yeah, exactly. They were possibly playable in some builds, but this makes those builds much easier to accomplish, I think.
And honestly, that Warcrest on him and the fact that he doesn't have the ally trait is probably the most important thing. His text in and of itself isn't spectacular. Infamy is pretty meh. I mean, giving him a naval enhancement for the military icon is kind of neat, but pales in comparison to just the fact that he's a 2-cost Warcrest.
I would be perfectly okay playing him without worrying about the infamy.
Absolutely.
In certain builds. He's not going in every build, by any means. This isn't a slam dunk windmill kind of card.
No.
But it is interesting. You know, speaking of the infamy ability, though, I do like the idea of once you've given him that naval enhancement, the idea that you could kind of ambush him into the challenge, so to speak.
Yep.
Obviously not the ambush keyword.
But he's...
Yeah. But surprise them with the fact that, oh, now there is a Warcrest in the challenge, and then suddenly slam them with the events.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty sweet.
Okay. So, Will, what's your rating on this guy?
You know, he's... It's kind of tricky. He's got the two icons there that are not Intrigue in Lannister... I'm not sure if that's good or bad. The ability doesn't have much effect, but the crest is nice. It's in the C range. I'm leaning towards giving him a C minus because I feel that the builds that want him, even though I'm excited for them to be available, I still think it's pretty specific builds that want him. I'm leaning towards C minus.
I'm going to give him a solid C. If he didn't have that war crest, he'd definitely be in the D range. But the war crest alone makes him a C.
You're correct. Without the war crest, he is definitely a D card. Thankfully, he has it.
Yes.
All right. Up next, then, we have Fleet from the Arbor. Now, this one is looking pretty impressive.
Yes.
This is a 7-cost, 7-strength army. It's also a house red one. It has intrigue with a naval enhancement and a power icon. No naval enhancement. It has a war crest. It has no attachments and deadly.
Ooh, deadly.
Yeah. Then the text is, lower the cost to play Fleet from the Arbor by 3 if any opponent is running an agenda. And then, as a response, after Fleet from the Arbor is declared as a naval attacker, choose another attacking character you control, stand, and remove that character from the challenge. So, what's this bring to Lannister's table?
I mean, it's a huge guy, clearly. Not particularly expensive guy. He's almost always going to be right in that sweet 4 range, which Lannister does have a decent amount of, but this guy is far larger than their other 4-cost guys. And another Warcrest.
Another Warcrest, another one that is not an ally.
Yes.
Which I think is great for a character of this size.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm going to invest that many resources into it, even if it only costs 4,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little worried about stuff being allies and getting discarded.
Yeah, I completely agree. No attachments is great. Deadly is even better. I love Deadly. And I especially love Deadly on a guy of this size that doesn't have a military icon.
Right. This army has the icons that matter with Deadly.
Yes.
Okay, there's some fringe cases where the military actually does matter. But by and large, these are the two that you always want.
Absolutely. There's obviously some combat tricks you can use with it. I'm not super sold on it. It does let you, do some extra bluffing in a game. But I'm not sure how often you really want to do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like a lot of times, I would just want to attack with the
Just also get this extra guy in the challenge.
And maybe even just need regular the fleet by itself. Yeah. Because, it's a 7-strength deadly army on those icons. What are they throwing in front of it? I mean, they've got to be throwing relatively beefy characters in front of it to be able to win on defense. And if they're throwing, 3 3-strength characters in front of it to win, well then, not only have you just knelt out their whole team, but they've got to kill a 3-strength character. If the characters are any smaller than that...
Yeah.
Then they probably have to kneel more than 3, and then you get into the issue where they have a lot of characters on the board. Maybe a reset's a good idea, but that's a different idea or a different issue. I just think the Fleet from the Arbor is going to be very effective for the challenges that Lannister wants to push across.
I do also want to mention I was kind of down on the responsibility. But Lannister is a great house to take advantage of that because of one card that I live in constant fear of. Will, do you know what card that is? That would interact really well with this response.
Card played out of a Lanny deck you live in fear of. Jorah Mormont.
That's exactly it. That's not it at all.
Oh.
It's clearly
me that plays that in Lanny decks?
It's just you.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah. No, it's Brothel Guard. Because you can use the Brothel Guard in a challenge, naval in the Fleet of the Arbor. Stand him, trigger his ability to kneel something else.
That's pretty sweet. I've seen that used. In fact, I did it at Gen Con via Tollgate.
Okay, yeah.
Is even cooler. I mean, heck, you might as well be running both Tollgate and the Fleet in the same deck. Because then you could start doing that, multiple challenges.
Yep.
Multiple challenges, assuming, of course, that you're running... the power behind the throne. So that you have the extra entry challenge for the Brothel Guard.
That is one way that the response is actually really cool. As outside of that, I stand by my point that it's fairly meh. So if I were rating this card, I'd make it a solid B, maybe even a B+.
There's one other point about this one before my rating.
We'll make your rating.
And it's just that, just going back to the strength here and the fact that this wins challenges very well. This makes it really easy for Lannister to win those by four or more
events. Yeah.
This is going to make Wars of One with Quills, I think, a bit more popular because it's going to be so easy to get that off.
Mm-hmm. Terminal Schemes, Terminal Schemes is going
to be easier. Seductive Promise is the big one.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to have to really watch out for Seductive Promise if you see Fleet from the Arbor on the table.
Yeah.
And, of course, this army is not unique.
Correct.
And, spoiler alert, there's a cycle of these in the pack for every house. So be on the lookout if you've got another player incoming with their naval army,
mm-hmm.
and you've got one on the board, you may lose it. So... Yeah. Be watching for that.
Be watching.
Go ahead.
However, does not change my solid B rating.
Well, speaking of B watching, I was going to say that I think I will give my solid B as well. Much like the Knight of Flowers example we gave earlier, this has a solid bit of impact on the table. Of course, it has some drawbacks mainly in the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, since it's going to throw off your setup and various things like that. But it's very, very solid.
Yes. Yes, it is. Okay. Next up, we're out of Lanny into Greyjoy. The Apostle of the Drowned God. It's a two-cost, non-unique Lincoln Greyjoy guy. He's one strength with the Ironborn trait. He has a power icon with a naval enhancement and a holy crest that I know Will is going to love. The text response, after you win a challenge in which Apostle of the Drowned God participated, discard the top card of the losing opponent's deck. If that card is a location, Apostle of the Drowned God claims one power. So he's finishing out that cycle that we saw initially in the Greyjoy House box that had the military entry guys that do this exact same thing with claim power off of characters, and then I think it was events with the entry guy. I can't remember for sure.
Events or attachments.
Events or attachments, okay.
Off the entry guy, and then characters for the military.
Yeah.
It almost completes it. I mean, it's not exactly a knock against it, but it does kind of bum me that it doesn't quite drive with the rest of the cycle, because his strength doesn't match his cost.
True, yeah.
He has this naval enhancement on the military, on the power icon. He has a crest, which makes him, looking at the card, makes him line up very differently from
that's
the other
true.
Ones.
You are right there. His ability, though, is what I was really talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an amazing ability.
No, it's not.
I've played a deck before built around using all of the military and intrigue ones. And, you know, they'll pick up a power here and mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
They'll trigger Corpse Lake some. You know, they're not amazing. I figure odds are good. If I get one on the table, I will probably claim one power with it during the game. But that's not terrible, depending on what else you want to do with it. The Apostle is much better than the other guys.
Yes. You get extra use out of him on a Power of Faith turn because of that Holy Crest.
Right. The Holy Crest is really what puts him over the top as far as being so much better than the others.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that Holy Crest. He's also an Ironborn.
He is an Ironborn. So, and a fairly cheap Ironborn at that.
Right. So what comes to my mind is that he's great fodder for two fantastic events.
Confession and Finger Dance.
Exactly. So I could see a Greyjoy deck. There's also, pardon me, from the previous cycle, the Follower of Two Gods.
Yes.
Who also is both an Ironborn and has a Holy Crest.
Yep.
So right there, I think between the two of those, you've got a great start on a very control-oriented Greyjoy
absolutely.
Build that wants to use both of those events. You throw in the Aeron Dampier that I love as a search engine for some card advantage there with those guys. And I'm really liking the way it looks.
Yep. So what kind of rating would you give this Apostle of the Drowned God?
You know, as much as I like the guy, I acknowledge that it is just fairly specific decks that want him. So he actually just gets a C. In that particular deck I'm thinking of, he's going to be a really solid player. It's going to fill a lot of roles.
Mm-hmm.
But he himself won't have the impact to be higher than a C.
See, I'm actually going to give him a D+.
Really?
Yes. a D plus because he does have a role in specific decks. But I think unless you're making a deck like Will was talking about, or potentially a Holy Crest deck, I don't think he's going to see much play ever.
Hmm. Okay.
I could maybe see going to a C minus, but I would not go higher than that. And I feel pretty confident about my D plus.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I'll stick with my C. Yeah. I may be blinded by my love of Holy Crests.
You probably are.
You do know that I love Holy Crests. So.
You love holy things.
I'm not even sure what that was a joke about.
I'm not either, Will.
Oh, okay. Well, here we go. We are going to hit on the Fleet from Pike. Now, this is a Greyjoy army. 7 cost, 7 strength. Military icon with a naval enhancement. A power icon. A war crest. Then text is no attachments. Deadly. Lower the cost to play Fleet from Pike by 3 if any opponent is running an agenda. And as a response, after Fleet from Pike is declared as a naval attacker, choose another attacking character you control, stand and remove that character from the challenge. I'm noticing a theme here.
Yeah, in the future, when we get to these guys, I'm pretty sure I'm just going to read the name, the icons, and the traits, because they're all the same. And potentially keywords.
Yeah, yeah, there's
but
there's
for the but the lower the cost to play whatever by 3, and then the response is going to be the same on every one of them.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the Fleet from Pike?
I mean, he is not quite as good as the Lanny one. He still doesn't have any bad traits, although but just based off the one
he doesn't have any great traits either.
Yeah, well, army's a fine trait.
Army's an okay trait. Sorry, but I guess I should just clarify what I meant there. I didn't, or he doesn't have anything with more synergy like Iron Man.
True.
In Greyjoy. Not that the Lanny one has great synergy there, but hey, it wasn't an ally, so I'll take what I can get.
That's fair. I mean, he does have the military icon with Deadly, I'd rather run the Intrigue, but it is still fine. He does have the naval enhancement on that military icon. He's all right. And I know we have talked about him before, I'm pretty sure, because he was one of the spoiled cards for the set months
right.
ago.
Right.
So I don't really have anything new to say about him. All the fleets are pretty solid, in my opinion. So he just continues that theme, although not as good as the Lanny one.
Yeah, I agree. He's probably a notch lower than the Lanny one. Greyjoy can still get some use out of the Warcrests.
Yeah.
Greyjoy
actually did a lot of use out of the Warcrests.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Greyjoy, I think, would rather have those Warcrests be on low-cost,
yes,
weenie characters to kneel for some effects and whatnot, but Greyjoy's already got such great low-cost, high-strength weenies,
mm-hmm,
that it, at least as far as bringing a beefy character to the table goes, I don't know that Fleet from Pike has a home as well in Greyjoy as, mm-hmm, the Lanny, the Red One Fleet does.
Yeah.
It does have Deadly on the power icon, on power challenges, which is nice. Like you said, the military is kind of blah, but it's not non-existent.
Yeah.
I just don't feel it's going to be as effective in Greyjoy comparatively. I'm feeling that it's a C or a C+. Greyjoy does have several armies, mm-hmm, to choose from.
Yeah.
Fighting for that particular role.
Yeah.
If I'm looking for a possibly 4-cost Greyjoy army to use, I'm probably looking at Balance Host, because I think the losing all keywords is going to be higher, mm-hmm, impact.
Fair enough. I'm going to give him a B-. I'm not quite going to drop him down in the C range, because he still is a solid card, but again, not as good as Lanny, unfortunately. Next up is, again, another card that we have talked about in the past, who is very, very cool. It's a new Victarion Greyjoy, 4-cost unique Greyjoy dude, 3 strength, military icon with a naval enhancement and power icon. He is an Ironborn. He's a lord. He's a captain. Not to be confused with a lord captain.
My captain.
I would let Victarion captain my ship any day, if you know what I mean. This Victarion specifically. While Victarion Greyjoy is attacking, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1. If you control more participating characters with naval enhancements than the defending opponent, and a Warcrest.
I dig it.
This guy is very good. As long as, he's really just really good in general. I was going to say as long as you play naval icons or naval enhancements, but Victarion has one on his own, so You'll at least be able to use him on military challenges that he is participating in.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's kind of interesting looking at him, because there's kind of an element of bluffing to Naval, right?
Yeah.
As far as, will he add him to the challenge, won't he, and whatnot. And, you know, my first thought with Victarion is, oh, sweet, when someone's not expecting it, you can jump Victarion into the challenge with the Naval enhancement, and then your claim gets bumped and whatnot. But the flip side is, well, after you do that, your opponent can then add their Naval characters, and it's just looking for the number of Naval characters, not necessarily the strength.
It's looking at the number of characters with naval enhancements, not necessarily the number of dudes declared as naval attackers or defenders.
Right.
It just counts the number of enhancements.
Right. So it could set up some interesting situations, I think, where using Victarion in an incoming challenge kind of forces your opponent to use up... I mean, any incoming military challenge can potentially force your opponent to use up defenders.
Yes.
But Victarion in particular pushes them to go ahead and use up their naval guys to avoid that increased claim. And, you know, Greyjoy can build some high claim stuff
that they can.
And, you know, make you feel it with their high strength to low cost
yep.
guys. So Victarion, I think, has a home with that kind of theme and seems pretty solid.
Yeah.
Plus some badass armor.
It is very good.
So what are you feeling for a rating on that?
I'm leaning towards A-.
A-?
Yes.
You're thinking that high, dang.
I am. I am very impressed with this Victarion. I think you're going to see a lot of this Victarion.
You know, I don't think I'd go that high. I'm giving him a solid B. In my mind, he's very similar to that Knight of Flowers example because he has that obvious built-in drawback where your opponent just has to have as many characters with naval enhancements in the challenge in order to turn off the ability. Stats are solid. It is a high-impact ability when it goes off, but it does have a built-in drawback.
That's fair. I still stand by my point.
Fair enough. Agree to disagree. Okay, next up, we move on to Baratheon with Lady Olenna's Guard. This is 4 cost, 3 strength, military and power icons. It is House Tyrell, and it has melee and renown. And appears to be unique. Alright. So, you know, it's alright. Not super exciting.
No.
It's another solid renowny dude for Baratheon.
Mm-hmm.
Melee plus renown is kind of an interesting combination. Especially at this strength point. I think it means more often than not, actually, I think it almost certainly means if you use this guy in a challenge, you get the renown.
Probably.
Melee is, I think, a deceptively powerful and underutilized keyword. And it's going to win challenges for sure.
Yeah. I hate the 4 costs. There's a lot. Bera has, maybe more than any other house, a lot of decently expensive guys that they want to play, and I'm just not sure if Lady Olenna's Guard is going to see a ton of play on his own. The melee and renown is pretty neat, but I'm not sure I want to play him over, you know, any given Robert Baratheon or
I think you're right there about to hit the nail on the head where that is such a clogged cost spot. Like Lannister is so clogged at the 1 cost spot. Baratheon is really clogged at 4.
It's even worse to be clogged at 4.
Yeah, it is.
I could take being clogged at the 1 cost spot. I can live with that.
Yeah, because you can still... You could potentially run all those in a deck and have amazing setups and whatnot.
And play 5 guys a turn.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you can keep the draw up. Sure, they're all going to be relatively low impact, but that's a lot of cards.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but trying to run the entire deck of 4 drops...
That's not going to work out very well.
No, it's not going to happen. Yeah, so that's the tough spot. If this was 3 cost, or if it was non-unique, maybe
I could see that.
Then I could see it. It does feel a little weird to me to see that little unique signifier here.
I mean, there is only 1 Lady Olenna's Guard.
Yeah, but it just whatever. I guess it's not any more strange than Joffrey's Guard or whatever. So I'm not sure why. I guess maybe it's just because I'm looking at that lower cost.
Yeah.
And Not any special text aside from the keywords. So where would you rate him then?
This is a hard one. I think I'm again going to dip down into honestly the D range. Probably a solid D, maybe as high as a D plus.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. That's what I'm looking at too. D with the possibility of a D plus. If folks want to experiment with some kind of Uber economy based Baratheon deck, they can afford all these four cost renowned guys. Maybe, but he doesn't have that all-important noble crest.
He does not.
To keep himself on the table. So D, it yep. almost certainly is.
Next up is another of the fleet, the Baratheon One fleet from Lycene. Same general stats. He has a military and a power icon. The power icon has a naval enhancement. Instead of deadly, add in stealth, and give him the mercenary and smuggler trait. Aside from that, all the rest of the text is the same as all the other fleets, and the same cost and strength. I mean, he's again fine. The stealth is very, very good. He still has the war crest. He doesn't have the same issue like the Greyjoy fleet has with deadly on a military icon on military challenges, because stealth is good whenever and wherever.
Yeah, it's going to be very effective on both of those. Aside from, I guess you could maybe argue that the higher strength the stealth character has,
the less important it is, because you're probably one of the challenge already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But still, the two being combined mean that you almost certainly win the challenge that's in.
Yes, that's correct. One thing I don't like is the mercenary trait.
I know. I was looking at that, and that just, my heart fell. I was so excited to see the Lanny army not be an ally, but seeing this be a mercenary is sad. The problem is, I guess, with that, or with my reaction to that, is I understand how Nedley it is. Like, it's a Baratheon card. It's obviously Salador, representing, Salador and, Stannis' forces. And he didn't really have a navy.
No.
He hired in mercenaries. It doesn't get more thematic than that.
You're totally right. However, gameplay-wise, it is unpleasant, what with dissensions being running around in droves. He's hit by
Erzokart
and Jorah.
Mm-hmm.
All three of those cards we named all see a ton of play. Dissension in any house, and Okart and Jorah in their respective houses.
And sometimes out of house.
And sometimes out of house if your will lets.
Yep. He's worth it.
Sometimes proper. For this guy, I'm going to drop down to the C range, honestly.
Yeah, I'm feeling C for the fleet as well. A lot of the positives do still apply as far as the strength turning on a lot of those events. But, Baratheon didn't have much of a problem at the moment triggering something like Seductive Promise.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Fleet from Lycene has a military rather than a intrigue icon, so it doesn't help on terminal schemes or anything like that. And the military win events are not by strength.
Like, they're just winning
They're off of that Warcrest. So it helps because it's a Warcrest.
Yeah.
But Baratheon has some cheap Warcrest
options.
They
do have some, yeah.
I'm kind of torn here. Like I mentioned, the stealth plus the strength feels like a win more kind of thing. I'm feeling like a C minus. It's still, reasonable beef, but... I think I may wind up looking for something higher impact.
I can see that.
All right, next up, we appear to have a plot. It's kind of unusual to see at this point in the pack, but whatever, I'm cool with it. I think they're grouped by houses this time, aren't they? Okay, this is Melisandre's Scheme. It's a 4 gold, 2 initiative, 1 claim plot. House Baratheon only, and you may play Baratheon characters out of your discard pile during the marshalling phase as if they were in your hand.
This is awesome.
This is real cool.
I really dig this plot.
I mean, the art's really cool to begin with. Scene from Dance with Dragons with the Lord of Bones, shall we say.
Yeah. Getting to replay all your guys that get discarded, whether it be with, dupes or refugees.
Those are the big two, I think. And at a Baratheon with their high penchant for uniques.
Yeah.
and you know, duping them for consistency to get the rush guys out. Being able to just drop all those uniques back into play for free is mm-hmm. going to be great. Oh, yeah. And the loyal guards,
yeah.
who you know double as uniques, as duplicates, yeah. basically, are going to be great with this. That's looking really solid.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially, I mean, in general, a lot of bear rush decks tend to be fairly intrigue light, so they tend to get pretty hurt with that. So I mean, if you lose a key guy, they're not just lost to the discard pile, and you're going to draw another one. You have a plot that you can just play and play them, basically.
Right. You know, even potentially, Braytheon has the guy, the name escapes me at the moment, but the one where you discard the top two cards of your deck to move someone from your dead pile to your discard pile.
Oh, Shy Initiate, is that who that is?
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Which kind of plays into this in a couple of ways. Of course, if the key character gets killed instead,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you move him into discard yep. so you can play him again. And if whatever you discarded in order to do that is a Baratheon mm-hmm. character, then you can
play him. In this case, it's actually like quasi-draw.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is really yeah. sweet. I mean, I already love Recursion, particularly mm-hmm. yeah. love it out of Baratheon.
Yep.
This doesn't exactly play well with the kind of like see who is stronger stuff that I'm
really.
Usually doing. But it's another interesting, solid option for him.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a very popular play.
I agree.
You think, does this bring Baratheon up a notch or two? I think we could all pretty much agree they're at the bottom. Right?
I'm not sure how much it will, but it's definitely a boon to them.
It's a big boon.
If I was going to rate it, I'd give it a B, probably.
It's what I'm looking at as well. I think this is going to be pretty high impact. But not game breaking
yeah.
at the moment. I think it also though probably has some depths that haven't been explored
mm-hmm.
yet. That just aren't coming to me here at first blush.
Yeah.
So this is one that I'm gonna give a solid B2 right now, with the anticipation that it could very easily become a B+ for
oh,
sure
yeah.
As we get a little more experience with it.
Next up is another card we've seen in spoilers, Wyman Manderly. He's a 3-cost, 3-strength, unique start character with an intrigue icon with a naval enhancement. He also has a power icon. He's a lord, he's a traitor, and he is House Manderly. While Wyman Manderly is participating in a challenge, as attacker or defender, doesn't matter, just as long as he's participating. Participating characters with strength 2 or lower do not count their strength. And he has a noble crest.
He's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if I go as far as to say fantastic. He is absolutely a solid start card.
I mean, what does he have a downside right now? I mean, he is a traitor, which to me feels like it should be a negative.
But it's not really.
But by and large, we got nothing.
Dario will have.
I was going to say, you've got Dario, and that's effectively
yeah.
it. Just throwing this out here again, I think there should be more traitor hate at
the game. I completely agree.
But I mean, so the downside is very minimal to Wyman.
That's true.
It's an ability that I think Stark in general really wants to negate a lot of those incoming little bitty
mm-hmm.
intrigue challenges. He's got that naval enhancement. It's actually kind of cool, I think, to be
yeah.
able to jump him in and then negate stuff.
Some strength,
that's,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He's a noble, which
yeah.
is always a great crest to have. That helps you dodge a bunch of effects. Power of Blood's a possibility.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. What else you got?
I mean, he's definitely a solid card, and you'll see him in pretty much every Stark deck, but he's definitely not a powerhouse card in and of himself.
Okay.
I will never say that Wyman Manderly is a bad card. That will not happen.
Right.
He's just not... Fantastic is probably too strong of a word for me to want to use with him, though.
Fantabulous?
I don't like using that word because I think it's stupid, so I would also not use that.
Okay. Well, if I'm not jumping too far ahead, then I'm going to say I would give him an A-.
Really?
I'm going to give him the minus just because I think he will be in 90% of Stark decks. But there may be some super rush kind of combo style Siege of Winterfell decks
mm-hmm.
that won't mess with him because he doesn't have a military icon.
Yeah.
But I think essentially every other Stark deck is going to want
a copy. Yeah, I'm going to give him a B+ just because he's not... I mean, in my mind, to be an A card in general, yes, you are going to be seen in pretty much every deck, but you also have to have, you know, some kind of enormous game-breaking effect, or not necessarily game-breaking, but with a huge effect on the game, and I'm just not sure if Wyman Manderly will get you there. He is a great card, he is very, very good, but he's a B+.
I could see that maybe. We're not too far away there, I think. But regardless, we're going to see a lot of them.
That is
going forward, I think. All right, here we go with an army again. This is the Stark Fleet from Wolf's Den. 7 cost, 7 strength, military icon with the naval enhancement, power icon, Warcraft, army, house manderly. This time around, we get the keywords no attachments and renown, along with the, at this point, very standard abilities.
Yes.
What do you think about the fleet from Wolf's Den?
He's as good as the Lanny fleet.
Really?
I think so.
Okay. Tell me more.
I mean, I totally...
Does he have a car?
I'm not going to sing Grease songs with you. It's just not going to happen.
I'm just proud you knew it was Grease.
I danced that song in the male beauty pageant senior year of high school.
You were... Wait. Let's back this shit up. Sorry, listeners. Derail. You were in a male beauty pageant?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me more. How and why, and did you win?
I did not win, no.
Did you place?
I made the top half, but I did not win.
Bummer. So is that kind of like making like the cut at
yeah,
Worlds
probably,
or something?
Yeah, probably similar.
Okay, gotcha.
So, Fleet from Wolf's Den.
Listeners, don't let him live that down.
They won't. No, I think they're really good. Cheap, renowny guys with a Warcrest, with tricks. Plus, saying they're as good as the Lanny one may not be exactly fair, but they're definitely better than the Greyjoy and Bera fleets.
I'd give you that, yeah. To me, it feels like it's a half tick behind Lanny,
mm-hmm.
but it definitely feels like it's a step ahead of
yes.
Baratheon.
Yeah, the win acceleration is what really makes me put him up there. The fact that he does have his renown. So with the other fleets, yeah, they're huge and they're winning challenges for you. But in and of themselves, not doing anything necessarily. Whereas anything you win with the fleet from Wolfson is actively putting you closer to winning the game.
Yeah, which is nice. The stealth plus high strength is almost a Nombo,
yeah.
as the term goes, whereas renown plus high strength is yes. much more of a combo,
yes.
Which is nice. Yeah, he's just pretty solid.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned Siege of Winterfell decks just a moment ago in regards to Lyman Manderly. They'll probably dig this guy. Maybe not as much as, say, King Rob's host, who isn't kneeling. But getting the renown, which they can claim,
yep.
And pushing them to that win faster is certainly a consideration for
yep.
them. So I definitely see this as a card they'll be trying out.
I completely agree.
So what do you give it rating wise?
Thinking B minus ish.
I was thinking just solid B range. It's fairly high impact for the decks that want it, and
mm-hmm.
there's going to be several of those, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. Next up is Ario Hota, a new one. I love seeing new Ario Hotas. This one is 3 cost, 3 strength. Military is the name of that icon, and power. He's a captain and an ally, unfortunately. He does have the vengeful trait. Not trait, keyword. My brain just turned off all of a sudden. And the response, after you lose a challenge which Ario Hota participated in as the defender, discard the top 5 cards of your deck to choose and kill a participating character.
I friggin' love it.
He's pretty neat, I'll admit.
I mean, now, yeah, I admit what I have in mind is pretty narrow.
Okay, what do you have in mind?
But he's going to be amazing. Once again, the whole army recursion thing.
Yes, although,
the
fair enough.
Re-Arminator deck.
Yeah.
I think I finally found a name that I kind of like to use. For the Re-Arminator, you run him out of house, and bam, there's a huge chunk
yeah,
of your
five,
deck.
5 cards is
gone
right down.
Per pop. But here's the best thing about that. Not only does he ditch all that stuff so quickly, but you know what else he does?
Kills things?
Or doesn't do, more accurately?
Stays knelt?
Doesn't have a limit of once per
yeah.
phase.
Fair enough.
So
that's what I was getting to with the not saying knelt.
Oh, okay. No. No, not even that. It's after you lose the challenge. Couldn't you choose and kill a... Never mind. I'm looking at the wrong thing, but yes.
I mean, so you can use them in 2 challenges.
Yeah, yeah. I started to look at the
okay.
wrong thing for a second.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. No, the first part, your part, correct. But yeah, no, that's great. I would love to off some incoming opponent's characters to slow them down so I can get the army engine rolling.
Yeah.
And use him as the engine to ditch all those cards all at once. This may make me try flipping the deck back to being treated to, or alliance to Martell. Well, it could be treated. It could be south if I go back to the Martell direction.
True.
It's a tough call. I may just run him out of house and keep everything else allied to Targ. I don't know. But I think he's going to be phenomenal for that. Even just out of Martell, you've got some options.
Yeah.
What's the summer market, right?
Open market,
yeah. You know, ditch great big chunks of your deck and then get back exactly whichever card you want. Probably one of Martell's very impactful events.
Probably.
You know, at that point, he's almost search. Like, he's killing incoming characters, and then he's almost just being a search card for you.
That's fair.
And, of course, the Dark Star.
If you get Dark Star, it's pretty awesome.
I think any Martell deck that I'm running Hotal in, I would probably be tempted to run triplicates of the Dark Star.
I guess I could see that, yeah.
I would be tempted. I don't know if it's always the right play, because he can still die, and he's unique. But if you're whacking such big chunks of your deck that quickly, it seems pretty cool.
Yeah. So what's your rating, Will?
See, this is where it gets tough, because there's a couple builds like that where I am so excited about him, but I understand there are decks that are going to be really wary of ditching that many cards. And he's not just broadly applicable. He's got that ally trait.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, but I think he's probably just a C to a C+.
I'm even going to put him lower than that. I'm going to give him a C-.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it the ally trait?
The ally trait's a part of it, and the fact that you are whacking off your deck. And yes, I totally meant to say that.
Yeah, you did. You know, speaking of another deck that would like that, Clansmen using Kron,
Son of Cattle Earth,
to put stuff into play.
That's true. Still sticking him at a C-. The ability is pretty good, because it is just choosing and killing a character, you know, a character that they want to challenge with, basically.
Another deck actually might not mind it that much. Targ Recursion, the long lances and stuff. You're already plowing through that discard pile. I don't know.
I would,
Marwyn's probably the better idea. Sorry, than the Street Wave stuff. Street Wave thrives off of not having very many things. Marwyn, on the flip side, I think would rather have a large discard pile.
That's fair. Still sticking him down there. Just because it is a big set. I mean, sacrificing 5 cards of your deck is a good amount of your deck of cards that, unless you do have Recursion, which, I mean, I guess Martell does have. I mean, they do have Open Market, which is pretty meh, honestly. But they do have Prince's Plans.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm still not even sure if I'd want to do that, because at that point it's just getting back 4 random cards rather than, you know, if you're trying to seed it well, to get back 4 specific cards.
Right.
So, I mean, honestly, C might even be a little high. I'm going to stick with it, but it might even be a little high.
Really? Wow. Interesting.
I'm,
that'll be one I'll be interested to hear other people's opinion on. But I'm just not digging on then. Man, is it back to me on another one of the armies?
It is back to you.
Man, I get stuck with all of these. This one is the Martell Army, Lady Nim's Guard. Of course, 7/7, military and power with no naval enhancements.
Correct.
Still the Warcrest and just the army trait, and she has no attachments and stealth. She does have the lower the cost to play Lady Nim's Guard by 3 if any opponent is running an agenda, but then her responsibility is very different.
Yes.
It is response, discard a card from your hand to cancel a card effect just triggered that chooses one of your Sand Snake characters as the only target.
Blah.
Yeah, you know, maybe if Sand Snake decks were a thing. You know, I almost kind of wish that it had the Sand Snake trait itself. Even though it wouldn't be strictly Nedley, I think having a huge, beefy character like this would be such a boon to those decks. Can you imagine slapping her on the table with one or two of the Sand Snakes that grant keywords and icons and things? That would be sweet.
Yep,
and being able to search it out.
With Noise for Grief.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yep.
But it's not the case.
No, it's not. I really don't have much good to say about this card. I mean, it suffers the same thing as the Bera Fleet. The Bera Fleet with stealth, but on a huge body, to where it's not necessarily doing you much. The Warcrest is neat, because Martell doesn't really have a ton of those. but the response is very, very, very lackluster. At the cost of a card, and it's a very narrow focus.
Yeah, yeah, it has to be a Sand Snake. It does cancel any card effect, though, which is interesting. You know, events or character abilities or locations, attachments even, or get this, this could cancel a plot, couldn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, which plots are you really going to be able to cancel? You know, one of the main ones I can think of is Search and Detain.
Search and Detain.
You know, the City of Sin, if there's only one city,
and they choose a...
Yeah, and they choose a Sand Snake. You know, there's just...
There's not a lot.
Not a lot of them that just choose a single character. A lot of the plots are more global effects.
I'm going to give Lady Nimsgard a D.
That's what I'm looking at, too. She's one of those cards I want to try and see if it's more surprising than I think, but odds are really good that I'm just going to wind up pulling her and saying, well, that didn't work.
I don't even want to play with her that much. I'm giving her that.
Did you give her a lower than that D, maybe?
I thought about giving her an F.
Wow.
I don't think I would ever put this card into a deck. Maybe if I was trying to make, like, a dedicated Warcrest Martell deck.
Okay.
But they don't have enough tools for that. I mean, they have, what, two or three other Warcrest guys, so...
Yeah. They have the new two-drop from the last
set. Yeah, Old Bill Bone and Ario Hotov from the Clash of Arms cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that jump to mind immediately. So, you know, honestly, I think I'm going to change my official rating to an F. F+.
An F+. Plus. Oh, okay.
An F+, plus, but an F nonetheless. Next, we are into Targ cards. This is Missandei. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's a foreign name. Foreign in Westeros. Or Essos, I guess I should say, because that's where she is from.
Foreign to Westeros?
Foreign to Westeros is very, very good.
Okay.
Two cost, unique Targ character. One strength with a power icon. She is an ally. But it won't matter a lot of the time. Because of the text, while no opponent controls a queen character, Missandei cannot be discarded from play. On top of that, she has two influence and a learned crest. This girl is, as the youth are saying, the bomb.
All that, and in fact,
a bag of potato chips.
Oh, potato chips. My apologies.
So that's how the youth are saying it.
Ah, okay. I wouldn't know, being the old crotchety man I am now. Yes.
No, she is awesome. Normally, the ally trait would kind of suck. But she can't be discarded from play if no one has a queen, and there aren't a lot of queens that see play, honestly.
I mean, the main thing you're going to have to watch out is against Lannister. They've got the queen that sees
Cersei,
play.
Yeah.
The Lions of the Rock, Cersei.
Yeah, but outside of that...
Even in Targ, you don't see Dany that much.
You might see Dany in a couple Targ decks. Not every Targ deck by any stretch of the imagination. The only other thing is maybe in a deck very heavily based around Kings that might run Jane Westerling out of house. Or if it's Stark, that might just run Jane Westerling.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
But more often than not, she's not going to be discarded. Can't be discarded from play. Your own threat from the Norths aren't going to get rid of her. Dissensions and Jorahs and Sarah Sokarts aren't going to do anything. She gives
Okart stands the best chance, I think. Because that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, she is in Lannister. Yeah.
Against Lannister, she probably is vulnerable with Cersei and Okart being in the same house.
Yes. But outside of that, and even then, it's them needing two specific cards, answer, and again, she might even be the best target for him. But, I mean, she does give two... I mean, two influence and a learned crest opens up a lot of doors on top of Linked Advisors and Marwyns. More influence is always good. I really dig... Really dig Missandei.
Oh yeah, of course. There's the plot cancel with
Outwit.
Thanks to that learned crest, influence is great for Targ. Of course, for so many reasons. You know, I'm feeling there is a printed drawback on her to turn that ability off. But I think I would still put her in the A range. I'm feeling an A- because she isn't high impact herself. But she just combos so well with so many synergies for
Targ
that I do want to put her in that A range.
Absolutely. I was also going to give her an A-.
Okay.
Good. Because again, she, just like you said, she doesn't do anything on her own to alter a game, but she allows for a lot of additional options.
Right. I really think she's perfect for that.
And she's not going anywhere most of the time.
Right.
As far as being discarded.
All right. Up next, we have Captain Grolio, who is a Targ unique. He's 4 cost, 3 strength, intrigue, and power icons, and the power icon does have a naval enhancement. He is a captain and has the response text, after you win a challenge in which Captain Grolio participated by 4 or more total strength, search your deck for an attachment and add it to your hand, then shuffle your deck.
I like this guy a lot, actually.
I dig him pretty well. I'm never a super huge fan right off the bat of 4 for 3, but a repeatable search effect is strong card advantage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And Targ does have a lot of attachments that are worth it.
Yep. I mean, anything from Flamekiss to... I don't know, Flamekiss is a big one. If you're playing with Maester Chains,
Dragon's Skull,
Dragon's Skull
so
also.
You, main deck Maester Chains, main deck, he can go get.
If
you're running Summer, he can go get the Black Raven, which could be kind of cool and free up a plot slot for you. That's surprisingly difficult to say.
My only real complaint about him is that on a lot of cards that are win by 4 or more, I don't like to play them a lot of times, especially if they're characters, if they can't win it on their own, which Grolio cannot, unfortunately.
He
has to have a friend, at least one friend in the challenge with him, short of strength boost of any kind.
Right. The nice thing, though, even though you're going to have to throw someone in with him, the nice thing in Targ is that they are probably the house, aside from Greyjoy, that has the easiest time winning by that much because they can lower the opponent's strength.
That's fair.
So I think odds are actually quite good that he's going to wind up winning those challenges.
Yep.
You know, Griff, the Elder, that is, the character agenda, is a card that we thought had a lot of potential when he came out. We haven't really seen him pan out the way we were hoping for yet, and I'm wondering if Grolio might not be a big tool to push that that kind of build.
It could definitely help.
You go search out those flame kits or whatever and get them as fast as you can so that you can start looping them with Griff.
Yep.
So I think he's going to be pretty solid.
I agree. Stick him at a B.
That's what I'm feeling, too. He does need a fairly specific game plan there, though a lot of Targ decks do use
they're already
flame
playing,
kissed. And he does need a little bit of extra support, but he's going to be a very useful source of card advantage, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Next up is the next fleet.
Thank goodness I didn't have to read one.
It is the fleet from Volantis. Again, 7 cost, 7 strength. This one has an intrigue icon and a power icon with a naval enhancement. It is an army and, again, a mercenary. And then all the same text except for his keywords. It has no attachments. And this one actually has melee.
That's interesting.
Yes.
That's kind of weird. It's much like stealth.
I think you don't need melee on a big... If you want to give melee to somebody, you want to put it on someone little to where they have to overcommit to beat just a random chud.
Right.
On a big army like this, it doesn't really need melee.
I'm also a little weird just conceptually how a ship has melee, or a several ships.
They all get in there.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. But yeah, it's just overkill.
Yeah.
With or without the keyword, this army would play almost exactly the same for Targaryen.
Mm-hmm. The mercenary trait hurts. Same as with the other the Baratheon fleet, the fleet from Lycene.
Yes. You know, and it hurts maybe more than you'd expect, because a lot of Targ decks are floating recruitment around these days. It's real popular, but it's worth noting, and this is why I didn't try a similar deck to the See Who's Stronger stuff, because recruitment, the influence cost must scale to the cost of the army. The mercenary.
Yes.
This one just happens to be
the
army. And, you know, I'm not sure it's worth it for me to pay 7
influence to get this guy back.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just awkward. The deadly on the Lannister army on those two icons is going to be far more effective.
Oh, absolutely.
At either killing a character or, by and large, pushing through stuff unopposed than the melee. With it being melee, the opponent knows you're going to win the challenge always, no matter what, which is okay for you, but they're gonna have the ability to throw in chump blockers with impunity. So you're not earning power off.
You're
of this
just
guy.
Winning a challenge,
right? The Warcrest doesn't
do much.
Feel as exciting for me in Targ, maybe because they already had a few Warcrests floating around and had Daemon Blackfire to give all of their guys Warcrests if they desperately needed
that's
Warcrests.
Fair. Yeah.
So it just doesn't feel as exciting there for me either. Honestly, I think this one feels like the least exciting.
I absolutely agree.
Right now, anyway. So I'm feeling a D.
I was also feeling a D.
Probably a D. Yeah.
Next up
is actually my card.
Oh, it is. Oh, yeah. I forgot. It was me reading a fleet. The fleet was Red Knights. Assumed it was you.
Yeah, exactly. I almost let you read this one. No, this is a neutral card. And boy, does the art look kind of screwy with
it. Yeah, because it's neutral and it's a very dull color.
Yeah, like everything is this drab gray except for the man's bright red sash.
Yeah.
And so it's a little weird when you get yours. Take a look, guys. But this is the Summersea Corsair. He is a Shadows card.
Yes.
With an S1 cost, 2 strength, a military icon with a naval enhancement, and intrigue icon. He is an ally and a smuggler and has the response text: after Summersea Corsair comes out of Shadows, reveal one card from the top of your deck for each smuggler character you control. Choose one revealed card and add it to your hand, then shuffle the rest back into your deck.
This guy is really awesome.
I think he's pretty freaking cool.
Just on his own, you bring him out and you're replacing him with the top part of your deck. Any more smugglers, which we've already seen a couple, or I guess we've really just seen the Baratheon fleet, I guess, is a smuggler. But we have seen Solidor Son, which is spoiled for a later chapter pack, so clearly there is a smuggler theme, at least coming out of Baratheon. I'm not sure how much any other house will get.
I'm assuming this means that we'll get a couple somewhere else, since he's neutral, or at least a couple neutral ones.
Yes.
But yeah, it looks like they're going to push that theme.
Gets around the draw cap, just placing it directly into your hand. I really like this guy.
He it's kind of interesting. He feels like potentially a house messenger on steroids.
Yes.
Sure, you've got to have at least one other smuggler in order for him to be equal to the number of cards you're looking at. But even if you're just grabbing the top card, I think it's worth it. But once you get to the point where you've got maybe 4 smugglers in play, now you're digging as much as a much and more without having to give your opponent a card. And you get the body on the table as well. I'm feeling he's extremely solid.
Yes, abso-dam-lutely.
Said he's not exactly high impact himself.
No,
An ally.
Yeah, his body alone is nothing to write home about.
Yeah, he is a Shadows card. Those already kind of tend to be, resource intensive. He has a one gold cost to come out of Shadows, meaning almost all the time it's going to be challenges or later, which almost certainly delays the use of the card that you get until next turn. I'm feeling like a B minus.
I was going to give him a B.
Okay.
I can see a B minus. Just because his, like, outside of his response effect, he's just a random chud that doesn't do anything.
Right.
And for his response effect to really be good, you need extra guys.
Yeah, I think the thing that bugs me, you need the extra guys, but I think the thing that brings me down to the minus is definitely the fact that you, thanks to the way the Shadows works with his one cost, the fact that you almost certainly have to wait to play whatever it was that you grabbed really is kind of a ding.
That's
in my
true.
Book.
Yeah, I can see that. Next up is an agenda, one that has already been spoiled, the Black Sails. It has the text: when you reveal Black Sails as your agenda, shuffle your deck and cut it into 2 stacks. Then the opponent to your left chooses one stack to be the hold, which is out of play. The other stack is your draw deck. And then it has a response: after you win a challenge in which you had at least one naval attacker, choose one card from the hold. At the end of the phase, add it to your hand. Limit once per phase. I think it's a really cool agenda, and it's probably the most, I don't know, I can't think of, well, what word am I thinking of, Will?
I'm
interesting?
Not Okay, maybe? Unique.
Unique. Possibly. Yeah, the most unique agenda we've seen in quite a while.
It's definitely not really an effect that we've seen in the LCG before. Creating this extra kind of out-of-play area called the Hold, which is interesting. I mean, there is some serious card advantage potential here, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Card advantage and quality, I guess I should say. You're only ever getting the one card per phase here, which most of the time means one card per turn.
Outside of epic phases or, like, Lucas Blackwood shenanigans.
Yeah. Or Den of the Wolf.
Or Den of the Wolf, you're right.
But you get to look through essentially half of your deck and grab whatever card you'd like. Now, I mean, it has the same issue that I had with the Smuggler.
Yeah.
And that you're going to have to wait almost certainly to play that card
until
you loop back around.
Yeah, it's even more on this. Because at least with the Smuggler, if you bring him out in challenges and you get, like, a challenge event, then you can use it in that same challenge phase. Where the Black Sails, unless it's a dominance event, then you're waiting until the next turn to play it.
Right. Which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure we'll probably have an episode where we can devote
A lot more time to the Black Sails. This is a very intriguing agenda to me.
Yes, we'll come back to it for sure. Just in general, looking at this pack, though, without getting as much into the strategy and thoughts about how big of a deck you should build or not build with it. And the answer, of course, is still to build a 60-card deck.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But we can get into that otherwise. What do you think, with just this pack and the cards we're getting now, is this going to make a splash in the field?
I don't think so. I just don't think there's, like, Greyjoy got 3 naval characters and there's the 1 neutral. I don't think that's enough to make a Black Sails deck and work. Now, 2 or 3 packs down the line or at the end of the cycle, then I think absolutely there could be some Black Sails decks.
Now, there's a card coming up after this that we haven't gotten
that's
to
true.
Yet that I think helps that get rolling quickly. We'll get there in a moment, but I think because of that, I think it's worth it for Greyjoy players to go ahead and give it a shot. I think folks are going to want to give it a try, and I think Greyjoy stands the best chance of doing it right now.
Yeah, Greyjoy is the only house I would consider it at this time.
Yeah, the other ones, not yet, but I think it could be there, it could be cool, and I think there's the potential here for how to say this, for this to be a fixed, so to speak, version of the Maester's Path, in giving you similar levels of card advantage and quality, but requiring more work and being more effectively limited.
Yes.
So all of that said, I'm going to tentatively give the Black Sails a B.
That's exactly where I would put it.
It
could go up in the future, but it also could go down. Agendas like this are really hard to judge at the beginning of the set because we don't know what's coming out to support it.
At least this is one that came out with a reasonable amount of support
this
first pack.
Yeah.
So people are going to be able to start experimenting now.
Mm-hmm.
With after pack 2 is out and we've had some time, I think we'll be able to start solidifying our calls.
I agree.
Unless there's something just absurd that comes out later on in the cycle.
Yeah, I'm loath to even rate Black Sails right now, but I would give it a B if push came to shove.
Okay. All right, then this brings us to the card I said we'd get to. This is a 4-5-1 plot, which is, as you know, is the best
stats for a plot. Couldn't be better.
Exactly. It's titled Naval Reinforcements, and when revealed, if you are running the Black Sails agenda, reveal 1 character from The Hold and add it to your hand.
This is a great plot.
It is.
Very great plot.
It is a one-sided search plot with great stats, essentially. You don't have any control over what's in your hold, but there's going to be something in there that's worth getting. And then the great thing, I think, is being able to flip this first turn and then immediately find out what's in your hold so that you do know what's there, what's still left in the draw deck, and you can plan accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, as people have pointed out, there's the slight chance, however improbable it is, there is the slight possibility for every single naval character you have to wind up in the hold.
And this lets you get one of them.
Right. So I think it's solid.
Yes.
It's interesting. It dives into new spaces for a plot, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure this is the first plot we've had that specifically references running an agenda, yeah, right?
Another card, even.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Even something like Outwit doesn't really reference a specific card. It just asks you to do something.
Yes.
So it's weird. I think that opens up some interesting space.
It absolutely does.
So I'm eager to see if they try something out with that on down the road. Mm-hmm.
This card, again, I'm going to give it a B, but it's going to scale with Black Sails.
Yeah.
If Black Sails gets really good, the Naval Reinforcements gets really good. If Black Sails kind of putters off into nothingness, Naval Reinforcements is going to follow suit.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah. Because of that reference, it's directly tied into
Black Sails. Yeah, it does literally nothing if you aren't running Black Sails. It has stats.
I would be tempted to say that Naval Reinforcements will always have a half letter to a full letter grade above whatever Black Sails mm-hmm. is. So if I stick with my B rating for Black Sails, I'm tempted to say Naval Enforcements is B plus to A minus range because that guaranteed search is always just going to be awesome.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I can see that. But I think we are both in agreement that it scales with Black Sails.
Oh, definitely.
Whether it's by the same margin or a slightly larger.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if Black Sails winds up being a D agenda, then Naval Reinforcements, I'd say, drops to a C plot.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's going to be about the best plot you can play with that agenda. But yeah, you're right. It'll move depending on the agenda. That brings us, I believe, to the last card in the pack.
Yes. It is Crossing the Ruby Ford, another plot. It is a 5/3/1. It is a river plot, so gag. With the text, when revealed, each opponent must discard one power from a card he or she controls, if able. Then, if this is your revealed plot card, trigger the when revealed effect on the top river plot card in your used pile. Really, the only good thing about this is the high gold.
That's what I'm looking at. I mean, and it always has the copy effect.
True.
That the river plots have. So it's difficult to just nail them down mm-hmm. specifically because they are flexible like that. But I think you're right. The key is the 5 gold. The discarding one power is pretty blah. Right?
Yeah, very, very blah.
I mean, and it's any card at all. So, and the opponent has the choice, right? So if they don't have any power on their characters, you can still hit them with it, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, they discard power off of their house card if they have any. But
so I mean that means it's almost never going to be completely dead.
True.
Unless you open first turn.
Unless you do it this first turn.
Which you know then you're also passing up on the copy effect. But
yeah.
I guess you're stuck doing that with whatever river you start with. But all the river plots were so low gold.
Yeah.
Aside from what is it before the wall
before the black gates, something like that.
Yeah. That it made it really awkward to get mm-hmm. rolling with them. I could see myself using this as a first turn plot, even though I wouldn't
the text
really
doesn't
get
really do
much
anything.
Else. Yeah, and then my next river is going to copy the discard of power when it would
do something.
I'm not going to say it'll matter per se.
It's not impressive. The 5 gold is the big thing.
Yeah, and you know potentially in the mid game, I still don't feel that river plots are there. But if you're going to try and put them together and make them be there, I think crossing the Ruby Ford will be part of that.
I can see that. But I also don't think river plots are there.
Oh, yeah. So what do you, in light of that, what kind of rating do you give it?
I'd say a lot of the other river plots are probably F cards. Because of that, I'd give this one a D.
Yeah, I was feeling like a D plus to maybe a C minus, depending on how much this impacts the river plots as a whole.
I don't think it. I still think river plots are too far behind everything else to really even have a place.
That stinks.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is our review of the first pack, Rise of the Kraken. If you agree, disagree, think one of us is absolutely stupid, let us know through an email, through Facebook, through the Card Game DB page, through the FFG page. We would love to hear your opinions.
One last thought on the pack before we go. One I wanted to ask you in general about the pack, because we have all of the fleets, mm-hmm. right? They all came out in the same pack. Obviously, their utility varies as we mm-hmm. went over. But what do you think that what is their impact on the meta? They are obviously all designed as anti-agenda cards. It's, getting this huge influx of anti-agenda cards all at once.
It's not. It's
do
not,
you think it'll matter?
It's not going to be much. I mean, people will be playing some cheap big armies, but eh.
Yeah, I'm afraid. I like the intent there.
Oh, absolutely.
I would like for no agenda to be made a little more viable
not,
for there
not
to be
there
some
yet.
Incentive. But I think, by and large, all of those armies just read cannot be played on setup and then have a 4 gold cost. Which still makes them really awesome on a cost to strength ratio. Mm-hmm. But for the reigning in agendas, it's not there yet.
I agree.
All right, props and slops. You may notice a difference here for props and slops because we are minus Mr. Brad Zeiler. Unfortunately, he had to rush away at a moment's notice the instant we finished the chapter pack review and wasn't around here for our lovely props and slops. So I'll try to keep things brief because doggone it, it's just not as interesting when it's just me talking. I'm going to give some props real quick to Wizards of the Coast and Metagames Unlimited for the recent MTG pre-release. This was the Gatecrash set, the second set and the Return to Ravnica block. And while I was slightly less excited about Gatecrash after looking at the cards and mechanics than I was about Return to Ravnica, the event was still a blast. I went to the midnight release and played Boros, drafted a fairly decent deck, had a real sweet limited bomb that I opened called Assemble the Legions, which just keeps putting armies of tokens out onto the battlefield, which is pretty friggin' sweet. So, you know, I had a good time. All of my opponents were great guys to play against, chat with and whatnot. So, you know, I've got to say good things about the Magic meta and pre-releases and such there in Springfield, Missouri, because I just haven't run into those stereotypical, you know, Magic gamers that are just, well, you know what I'm talking about. So all good things have been had there. I'm also going to give some props to Archer Season 4, which I've at this point I've seen two episodes of by the time this airs. I think three will have been out. But it has been pretty hilarious. The first episode with the amnesia and all was decent, but the second episode wherein we meet Archer's longtime friend, who no one had ever mentioned before that episode, is pretty awesome. As Brett and I alluded to earlier, there are some pretty hilarious Tolkien references and some talk of Ents. And, I mean, doggone it, who doesn't want to have an Ent moot? So yeah, go check it out. There's always some fun Danger Zone-y goodness to be had in Archer, and Season 4 is a blast. Aside from that, I'll just look forward to seeing some of you great listeners at the Moonboy Classic Friday, probably not too long after this episode goes up on site. So, you know, listen to it on your way, and we can chat about the card reviews and the new format when I see you. Otherwise, if you're not going to be there, well, you're square. Yeah, you like what I did there? Yeah, neither do I. But anyway, if you're not going to be there, make sure you drop us a line at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. Or check us out on Facebook, Two Champs, One Chump. Once again, those are the digits rather than spelled out. You can catch us on Google Plus when I remember to log in. And if you tweet at us, twitter.com/twochampsonechump. If you tweet at us, I'll get the email so I'll remember to go check it because of that. So you can reach us in a manner of your choosing. With that said, Danger Zone. Turn around.
see.